Svinavatitamastumavidvishavahai. Om
Om
Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, so from what I understand, we're on page 40. We're on
39
the,
bottom, actually.
oh, so that Ahankara, that one.
Yes,
Ahankara
Ahankara.
Hridaya Granthi. Okay, so the Anucheta was the secondary result of directly perceiving the Lord, whose natural form is the highest bliss, is described. Okay, so you have the primary, right, which was the one before that. It's not exactly a book, but okay. Where is it? Okay. The man, okay. These are further effects. So then, okay, what's the, we got two. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so then we have knowledge of the Lord and then directly perceiving the Lord. So these are secondary aspects. We generally take them as very important, as primary aspects, because we're generally always looking at the situational kind of aspects in our life, right? And so, because in situations you can do things, and in those things, then you can have relationships, interactions, and everything. So since we're looking at at attaining relationships, then we're always focusing on those situations and what actions can be performed. But when you're on the transcendental platform in a relationship with Krishna, the relationship is there. The situational is just what comes up through which you express it. So we're doing it also is that we want to establish a relationship. And so then we're expressing it through the situations we're in. But it basically will tend to put more, a little more focus on the situational or the effects and things like that. Because you see in the Abhideya, then you're going to have, if we divide the Abhideya into three, the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana of Abhideya, then you're going to have the knowledge about, the relationship and all that, and the whole process. Then you're going to have the action in the process. And you're going to have the physical result or the transformation of the Lord's energies that come from that endeavor. But the actual prayojana is going to be then Krishna's pleasure, right? That's actually going to be the main thing. So it's just a matter of focus. So it's so perfect because everything's coming from Krishna. Then there's no question that it doesn't work according to the natural forms that is Krishna. Krishna is Satchidananda. Therefore, everything is divided into these three, of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So you can take everything and it will always fall into those categories. It's Krishna. It's his energies that expand. So therefore, the cause and the effect. So he being the cause, you'll see that in the effect. It's not that the effect can be different from the cause. It may have different, some special details and nuances, but that means that all that's originally Krishna. And so then all these, the positive qualities, the higher qualities, all these things, these are then the ones that represent Krishna. Even though he's everything, the thing is not everything represents him because being the material energy being separated from Krishna, you don't see Krishna there. So it's through those higher qualities that you can see Krishna. So the lower qualities will tend to get distracted, right? So that's why you see is that it'll mention the living entity being attached in the material world. So the attachment is the principle that you're looking at here. What kind of attachment? That's not the question. It's just any attachment that's material, pious, impious, more elevated, less more glorious, less glorious. It doesn't matter. You're still in the material world, maybe in a more glorious material position, but you're in the material world. Well, the point is you're trying to take that attachment to Krishna. We have knowledge of the material world, right? And so we're trying to get that knowledge of Krishna, right? So that's then what's going on is that the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, we're seeing it in its positive qualities in context of Krishna, right? That's what we're trying to do. So here the secondary results of being able to directly perceive the Lord, to have that knowledge of the Lord, these are secondary effects. Because actually the main one is that developing love for Krishna and exchanging in that relationship of love. That's the main thing. So therefore then the situational aspects and the activities within that are simply to express that primary. So since we don't have that naturally, we don't have it spontaneously, therefore through Vaidhi, using the intelligence, we put ourselves into those situations and performing those actions that will best reflect our desire to please Krishna. Whether we're always thinking about pleasing Krishna or not is another thing. But at least we're trying, right? Sometimes better, sometimes worse, you know, sometimes richer, sometimes poorer, sometimes in health, sometimes in, you know, sickness, you know, like that. So these things, that's happening, but the intent, as we were discussing before, that's the thing. You have time, space, and intent, you know, like that. End of Anucheda 16. Yes, thank you. And so then, that is then what we're doing. All we did is just review. We're reading just what the Anucheda itself was, the Patigya there, but then we've done talking about that. We still have to get down to the bottom of the page and read where. So that's the main thing, because we're used to is that we'll get facilities, we'll have someone says we'll go to heaven. What are we talking about? We're talking about a nice situation in which nice things and nice results are there. But we can't talk about what is the actual happiness that will be there, you know, because we can't really perceive of that here. We talk about that situation, or someone goes to hell, and we talk about, you know, the hell, fire, and brimstone, right? And that, but it's the situation, you know? That's what we're talking about, and the actions that might go on there. But the actual experience, we just say you will be unhappy, you'll suffer. The other, you'll be happy. But we can only say it, we can't experience, right? So we're so used to this, we're so conditioned to this, that we generally think according to this. I can see the Lord. Like people say, can you show me God? He says, yeah, we can show you, but whether you can see or not is another thing. You know, can you, tell us knowledge? Yes, we can tell you. Whether you'll understand means you have to have devotion. God reveals himself. So the secondary results, you see, are what we're looking for, because we work with secondary. But as soon as we start to see that the primary is actually the more important aspect, and the secondary has its validity in how much it is in support of that primary, then the vision starts to become more clear, right? And things become more simplified, more direct. Like that, as long as it's about the secondary, oh, you know, it's so difficult and we have so many this and that, because we're thinking that, no, the primary is just remember Krishna, never forget. So remember Krishna is those direct activities, what you do, never forget are the things you should avoid, or how the secondary is engaged in the Lord's service. So if we start there, it's very simple. Then from that simplicity, then you expand it to include how much detail you require, and then it works out for us like that. As long as we stick to detail and want to, and demand that the discussion has to be on the detail without getting into this theoretical primary stuff that's, you know, like that. We want some real practical, then we'll never understand. Because the point is, it's so simple. Krishna's God, we're his servant. We have an internal relationship with him, you know, and it's that simple. And so now how we get to that, then the Veda has given enough detail to accommodate all the different situations we're in, all the different experiences we may be having, all these different things. You know, so that's then the thing. Okay. So at the bottom of the page 39, Ahankara, Hridaya Granthi is destroyed. Okay, ignorance is cut and all doubts are destroyed on seeing the Lord in the mind and with the eyes, all karmas are diminished. Okay, Ahankara, Hridaya Granthi is destroyed. All doubts about seeing the Lord are destroyed. For those who hear about him and meditate on him, by hearing, thoughts about the non-existence of the Lord are destroyed. By meditation, mistaken thoughts concerning the Lord are destroyed. However, by direct perception of the Lord, thoughts about non-existence of the Lord and contrary thoughts are both destroyed. But so seeing, then you know, hearing the non-existence are destroyed. By meditation, mistaken thoughts concerning are destroyed. But by direct perception, then the thoughts about non-existence and contrary are both destroyed. So, you know, Krishna, how does he let this happen? You know, how this? Oh, why did he, you know, why isn't he in the nice guy and just go to the forest? Why does he have the battle? All those things are destroyed by meditation. Then you see the different aspects of there of how Krishna and his devotees are interacting. What's the actual thing? And then by hearing, then we can then understand the Lord exists. Right, through that intelligence. Karmas are diminished, kshiyate. A shadow, abhasa of karma remains by the will of the Lord. So karmas are diminished, because if you get rid of all karma, we have to remember this particular gross and subtle body we have are from karma. So if you get rid of all karma, you will end up having no gross or subtle body. Now what will you do? You can't express yourself. There's no senses. There's no anything that you can do anything with. Therefore, by the Lord's will, a shadow remains. So therefore, the form, your body, you know, has the form of what it looked like from its manifestation from karma. And then that same facility, now we use in Krishna's service. So for Krishna, it's not a problem that it's that body, you know, whatever it is. That's not the point. Whatever it is, you can use it for Krishna. As we see even with Ramachandra, you know, all the vanaras and the, you know, various animals, they're all serving Krishna and Krishna Lila, all the birds and trees and plants and the cows are all serving Krishna. So the form isn't actually the important thing. We may make it important about the form, but it's not. It's whatever it is. From there, if you follow your duties for that form, then you can serve. You can be engaged in Krishna's service, and Krishna will be happy. Right? Riti, the next Anucheta presents the conclusive statement of Sutta Goswami on the importance of practicing bhakti, that every wise person should render devotional service to Krishna, which not only purifies one's mind, but also gives immense joy during the stages of sadhana and perfection. Okay. So we see is that up to this point now, the secondary, and also we see another aspect of how it's showing secondary. Secondary, the Lord's existence, or the contrariness in, you know, that we may find in his actions. You know, how he's interacting with the demons or the devotees or like this. So what are those things? Those are the sat and the chit aspects. But he's showing the actual point, the main thing here, giving the summary, therefore, is then here, Anucheta 70, showing the contact of the devotees. The topic is summarized. Ato vai Kavayo Nityam Bhaktim Paramaya Muda Vasudeve Bhagavati Kurvantyatma Prasarani. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlivening itself. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.22. Right, so now you see it brings it to the Bhagavan platform. It means we see the existence of the Lord. We see, you know, how it's not contradictory. He is the controller of his energies and everything is working perfectly. But now we see him as the personality of Godhead and his interaction with the devotees and that bliss that is being experienced by the Lord and the devotees. Or by the devotees because of the happiness of the Lord. Does that make sense? So it always has to come to that level. If it stays only at that level of you know, he's God and, you know, seeing him and removing all doubts and these kind of things, this is good because it's in connection with the Lord. But we see is that when it actually comes to the point, then it's you're interacting with the Lord. Therefore, you're getting the taste. You know, there that so in the Gita, then you have that, what is it, Ramanti Cha, what is it, Tushyanti Cha, Ramanti Cha. So it's giving that point of that this is what is being tasted. That these great personalities then are always absorbed in the Lord. And that's the whole point. Having a nice situation, having good facilities, having good interactions, everything goes smoothly, that's all nice. But more important is that absorption in the Lord. Otherwise, then why is it Kunti Devi is praying that, you know, if all these, you know, now we're the emperors again, we have everything, all our enemies have been destroyed, they're unrivaled, right? Who can say they're an unrivaled emperor of the world? No one can even say they're emperor of the world, right? They're not even unrivaled in running their own little place. But here he's emperor of the world, unrivaled. You know, so, and the facility, the respect, you know, the everything goes smoothly. There's no one making trouble, right? And so, therefore, but Kunti Devi, in that perfect situation and perfect ability to perform action, she's saying better, it was better when it was worse, right? So we see this, all these sayings, they come from, they ultimately come from the principles of Shastra. If they work, they come from Shastra. That's why it's called Veda. And so, therefore, she was saying, when we were in the forest, when we were going through all the difficulties, we were more absorbed in you. And that gave the taste that's way higher than being the emperors of the world. You know, and being emperor, unrivaled emperor of the world in the Taittiriya Upanishad, in the Ananda, what do you call it? What is that? Bali, the second chapter. Then it takes that because they're trying to show what kind of happiness you can get. The living entity can get, the human being can develop. And so it starts that position that Kunti's at and her sons are at. And that's called one unit of bliss. One. So in other words, if you're, you know, president or prime minister of a country, that's only part of a one unit. And if you're just the guy walking on the street, you know, then you have to divide it up quite a lot. So one unit is taken there, and then it goes up to the demigods, and it goes up to Lord Brahma, until it gets thousands and thousands of times more than that. But then it says that's not even, it's only a drop compared to the ocean of bliss from being absorbed in Brahman. You know, the first point that was made, to know Krishna's existence. You know, and then you know Paramatma, then it goes even farther. But it says, but that ocean is a fraction of a portion of a drop compared to the unlimited, shoreless ocean of prema. And so you can see why they start off with the emperor, unrivaled emperor of the world as one unit, because you're going up into unlimited. And if you started off with, you know, the guy sitting on the corner of the, you know, how you say, the corner of the street, you know, and selling his bagels, and all his bagels get sold out by somebody comes and says, oh, we're having a program, I'm going to buy all your bagels. That happiness, you know, they don't start there as one unit. You know, They start at, with the emperor of the world, and still it ends up as only, you know, one drop, you know, or, you know, a fraction of a portion, you know, it's just, it doesn't even count. So she's saying that being absorbed in you, the person, and your relationship with us and how you were always there for us gives us way more happiness than being the unrivaled emperors of the world. So here's, and we have to understand is, okay, some dude says this, okay, you know, dudes do that. They say, yeah, yeah, you know, it's not, you know, it's all just this, that, and like that. And so here's a lady saying that, you know, and not just any old lady, she's a Kshatriya lady saying that. So you can imagine how much, you know, field of activity is. And she's saying it. So then one has to understand is, you know, this is significant. This is very, very significant. So therefore, this point of this great delight, you know, as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.22, then this is the actual conclusion. That's why, because Krishna says in the Gita, by getting a higher taste, you give up the lower. So as you advance and have that appreciation and have that faith, so that Krishna's existence and that non-contrariness means there's no contradiction in Krishna's existence and his actions, and his, you know, so therefore that is going to clear so many things. But it's when we get a taste for that devotional service, that's when then these lower things are just dropped, no problem. You know what I mean? People take up devotional service. The first day they surrender to Krishna, you see that the happiness that they're gaining compared to what was before was so great that they just drop things that they've been doing and had been important for them for, you know, so much of their life. You know, actions that they've been doing and values and all these, they just drop them because there's a higher taste. We might be get conditioned by the mode of goodness, so we don't continue to appreciate that. But the point is if we're always on that point of trying to, in the association of devotees, develop that, you know, that love for Krishna, that taste for the holy name, then, you know, there's always going to be something to take us forward. And so if we do that, it just continues nicely. Yeah? Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The speciality of devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is specifically mentioned herein. Lord Krishna is the Swayam Rupa, personality of Godhead, and all other forms of Godhead, beginning from Baladev, Sankarshan, Vasudev, Aniruddha, Pradyumna, and Narayana, and extending to the Purusha avatar, thousands of manifestations of the personality of Godhead, are Lord Krishna's plenary portions and integrated parts. The living entities are separated parts and parcels of the supreme, of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, Lord Sri Krishna is the original form of Godhead, and he is the last word in the transcendence. Thus, he is more attractive to the higher transcendentalists who participate in the eternal pastimes of the Lord in the forms of the personality of Godhead other than Sri Krishna and Baladev. There's no facility for intimate personal contact, as in the transcendental pastimes of the Lord at Vrajabhumi. The transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna are not newly accepted, as argued by some less intelligent persons. His pastimes are eternal and are manifested in due course, once in a day of Brahmaji, as the sun rises on the eastern horizon at the end of every 24 hours. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.22 purport. So here we see Srila Prabhupada is even taking it more depth, that it's not even just that you're worshiping Bhagavan, but it's worshiping Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So worshiping Krishna in Braja, that taste that is getting is even more, is the greatest position of enlivenment towards the self. So he's taking it beyond all these others, because as we mentioned here, he's starting with Krishna and then Baladev, and then go down to the first Chaturvyuha, the Sankarshan, Vasudeva, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha that are expanding from Krishna, right? and have that mood that they are Krishna from Braja, who's coming to Mathura and Dwarka. And so the Brajabasi see him as that Krishna in these pastimes. Then it gets down to and Narayana, right? So that Narayana there that's below that first Chaturvyuha, that's the Mahanarayan that in Vaikuntha is the highest manifestation. So they get up to that point. And then extending the Purusha avatars and all the others, so all the other pastimes are happening, and so Krishna's pastimes are happening. But they're all happening as Leela avatars and that expanding from the Purusha avatars. They only see that side. They don't understand Swayam Krishna. So in the next chapter, then he's going to make that point, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So of all these aspects of the personality of Godhead, then Lord Krishna, you know, the Lord and Master of the Gopis, that, you know, and the son of Maharaj Nanda and Jashoda, you know, the friend of Sudama and Sridama and Subal, this personality, this is the highest. And that taste, then, you know, well, it has no equal, right? And Jiva Goswami continues, the wise perform bhakti, which purifies the mind, atma prasada nim. That is not the only quality of bhakti. It is performed with the greatest joy, paramaya muda. The performance of bhakti does not give suffering, either during sadhana or perfection, as in the case of performance karma, right? Because karma is so much difficulty, while in the performance of bhakti, right, that where we're situated nicely on that, it doesn't give, it itself gives no problems. The material world may give some difficulty, but that's just because that's the way the material world is. And that gives rise also to so much nice interaction with the devotees, so much nice variety in the performance of the pastimes and all those things like that. Rather, it gives happiness in sadhana and perfection. Thus, the wise perform bhakti at all times, during sadhana and in perfection. Right, so that means they perform bhakti during sadhana. So that means the devotion to Krishna, that aspect is the main, not the sadhana itself. The sadhana is the form that is used to express that bhakti. So therefore, for Braja Bhakti, our chanting of Hare Krishna, you know, how we chant that and all that, you know, how we worship the deity, our particular, what we do at Mangalartik and the others, how we dress, how we do all these things. These are all there in support of bhakti, because you can see is that smartas may also worship Krishna and put a flute and everything like that, but their sadhana is not for bhakti. It's only for that bhakti is temporary, because as soon as they get their results, they give up that bhakti. So here then, Sutta Goswami is talking about that bhakti that does the bhakti, free from karma and jnana. That is what should be performed. Because the other forms of bhakti, it's still, your karma and jnana will only work when you apply bhakti, because it's Krishna who's giving the results. Right? So nowadays, how people just worship demigods directly or ignore God and that, that's not shastric. That doesn't give them their results. Like that. There may be some little piety that they follow some aspects of Shastra, but the actual, you know, their processes is not really going to get them anything. Like that. They have to properly follow, means they have to worship Vishnu. You worship demigods, you have to worship Vishnu first. You know, and so, you know, all these different things are there. But, you know, so here he's pointing out is that therefore, doing everything to please Krishna, that is the most important aspect, because that gives the happiness at all times. Sutta spoke thus in the verses. Okay, so is there anything on that? Any questions or on this Anucheta 17? No? We're good? Yes, please.
I was thinking that the difficulty with the main aspect of Krishna consciousness, or anything for that matter, why people are not interested, is that probably the details they constantly change, and there's a, you know, there's a certain newness to that. So one detail to the other, and then on a daily basis, it's all happening. So, you know, people more or less satisfied with that. But it's very shallow, actually. But what happens is that with the principles, we have to really meditate, as it was mentioned before. We should practice, then we should meditate. And then it will reveal itself, but it takes much longer. So those who don't have, you know, the character and the qualities, they're not interested, basically. So this, you know, this is my observation of why it is like that.
Yes, definitely. But you'll notice that these, as it says there, by that meditation, like you're saying, they have to think about it. That absorption then clears all the contradictions, all the doubts about Krishna's actions, and, you know, how he does things, how he as a person, you know, functions. And so that's then very important, because what do you want? Do you want to deal with Krishna, the person, directly in a loving relationship, or it's just you're trying to get into a nice situation that's better than the one we're in? You know, one that's stable, one has facilities, you know, one has some regular position, it's not temporary. You know, if that's all we want, then that means we're still burdened by the desire for liberation. And so even though it's in connection with Krishna, it's Vaishnava liberation, but it's still not going to bring us to that point of understanding Krishna as on that Bhagavan platform as Braja Krishna. It's okay to we'll understand another aspect where that feature of Paramatma is there. You know, that he's the Lord, he's the controller and all that. Because he's the controller, then he can get us out of this situation where we're being controlled. Because we don't want to be controlled. We want to be enjoying like that. And okay, if I have to be some submissive for that, that's okay. We see even the biggest guys, if they see that there's a situation, if they want to get results, they have to be submissive. Generally, they do it. They're smart, right? So, but the point is here is you're making the difference between Krishna as God and Krishna as the son of Mother Yashoda, is that then you have to be willing to go forward to that aspect of bhakti, to go through that stage. Because even then it's okay, God exists, so then prove it. Make my situation good. You know, but it's no, but then okay, I'm at that, or he's more, he's controller in that, so make the results of my actions, you know, beneficial for me. But it has to be no, you'll be happy. Because we're thinking if the situation is good, I'll be happy. Or if the facilities, I mean, the results are good, I'll be happy. The facilities and the actions are getting good results, I'll be happy. But we're on that platform, and as long as it's going nicely, steadily, we don't even notice. It's just supposed to be like that. And then as soon as something goes a little wrong, then immediately we're complaining, why this is happening? I'm a devotee. Why is this happening to me? You know, this is so they only actually notice when it goes bad and have an emotional reaction. But when it's good, it's just supposed to be like that. It's not that they're happy. It's just that they're not unhappy. So they go from neutral, you know, to unhappy. When they're unhappy, they want to get back to neutral, but they say that that's happiness. No, happiness is beyond that. Happiness is the relationship with Krishna. That's the whole point. And so we have to appreciate that the aspect worship of Braja Krishna means him as a person is the important element, not him as God. Him as God, those are secondary, as I mentioned, the secondary features. So you'll know God, you know, you'll be convinced of that. And by meditating on him, then it'll be removed. So when you see him, then these both can be removed. So you can see through the ears, you know, that's then the highest thing, you know, and you see the deity, Krishna reveals himself, you know, so many different aspects are there, and then all these things work very nicely. So therefore the sages are absorbed in that bhakti to Braja Krishna. So we see as in the he's already made this point, and then the third one, then he'll say Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. And then you'll see the rest of the Bhagavatam will be showing the pastimes and all that connected to that. But how does he see it? Okay, in the third chapter, then he expresses that, that this is the actual position. He's already pointed it out here in the second. The first chapter, then they're, you know, the sages are inquiring about Krishna and the Bhagavatam and what is this higher level of knowledge that you're giving, because he's already explained the other Puranas. Now this 18th Purana, you know, this special is unique, the Shuddha Sattva, you know, like that. They've heard the Sattvic, now the Shuddha Sattva. And so they're interested. But then next he's going to have Narad Muni and Vyasadeva, because Vyasadeva is also presenting things on this platform of basically the first two of Sat and Chit. You know, referring to Ananda, but not actually giving that really solid basis. It'll be there, but it's kind of hidden. In other words, he's doing this soft preaching and Narad Muni saying, this is bogus. You're not going to get anywhere. You know? Because the point is, principles are beyond people's experience. And so therefore, the eternal principles of transcendental are beyond their doubts. Their doubts are to do with details here in this world. You have to speak beyond that. Speak to the soul directly through the intelligence. And that's what's there. And you see Prabhupada's doing that when he speaks, especially when he goes out to these public programs or general audiences. He speaks right on that level. And then he starts bringing it down to their practical life. So Vyasadeva hasn't presented things directly up to this point from there. Right? So Hindus are the result of Vedic indirect preaching, right? And yogis at a yoga studio for their health and you know, it's cool and something like that. That's the result of, you know, New Age soft preaching. So you see is that, and that level is so much higher. At least they accept the guru, the shastra, all these basic things. You don't have to argue over that. It's you know, how to understand it or interpret it, right? That's the mimamsa aspect. But the point of that, it's based on the shastra, heard from guru and parampara and all these things. That's not a doubt at all. So the situation is way better. So Vyasadeva's, even his soft preaching is way better. But Narad Muni's pointing out is, no, you have to see, you have to speak directly about the personality of Godhead and his relationship with the devotees and how that is actually what we're trying to get to. Then after his meditation, again, see the meditation, then that Achinta Veda Veda Tattva becomes manifest. So now he can appreciate Krishna's pastimes in Braj, and how that difference and non-difference is there, and how that difference and non-difference spreads throughout the cosmos, because it is Krishna. I mean, he is everything, but at the same time, he's different from everything. And so then, now you can start the discussion of this question of the sages on how did this come to be spoken, because more important is what is Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is all these points that are given in the Bhakti Yoga process, the independence of Bhakti that's given, and then that Bhakti is towards Swayam Krishna, and that Swayam Krishna is understood through Achinta Veda Veda Tattva in his Braj manifestation. Once that's understood, in other words, you started with that, now you can get down to the question of how did this Bhagavatam come to be spoken? But if you start with come to be spoken, then when are we going to get to this? Then you'll have heard nine cantos without this, and then you have so many ideas. Like I don't know if you remember, when we're going through six canto, up to six, generally, everybody's generally pretty good with up to six canto. Because it's really straightforward. It's about engaging the secondary aspects in Krishna's service. most people, you know, that kind of thing, whether, you know, whether they want to get into Varnashram or not, it's another thing, but at least that. Then we hit seventh, and then it's not about that, it's about pure bhakti. There's a bit of confusion. But it goes away fairly quickly because Prabhupada would all, and the acharyas always talk about that pure devotion. And so that went very nicely, you know, once that's caught and then Ram's pastimes and all that, till we get to ninth canto. Then in ninth canto, you're giving all these very unique stories and you know, and seeing these in a context of that pure devotion, and it starts to, people start to have doubts, but not so many, you know, because the stories are so unique, you know, and that. Then 10th canto, okay, everybody's happy with that because reading Krishna book, hearing that, and, you know, we're devotees of Krishna, so that works nicely. Then the Dwarka pastimes, and, you know, maybe people aren't so clear on that because they don't read them as much, like that. And then when we get to 11th canto, when it's trying to separate the difference between the primary aspects of devotional service and secondary, that's then when the serious doubts started coming up on these points. And so then definitions that they had before, then they are understanding these things from that perspective and bringing it in from the primary and descending doesn't match in their mind. And so that's where a problem came, is that being used to the inductive but having fit Krishna consciousness into it, and then hearing from the deductive and how it starts to be in support of the primary rather than we just build up like this, rather than it's we're building up on stages that's descending, right? The stairs descend, then we get on this step that we're at and go up. But it's not that we start with ourselves and we create the steps. So that will be the difficulty if he hasn't explained it in this way, in this descending way of, you know, how Bhagavatam and Bhakti, how Bhakti is the, you know, Krishna is the topmost, that Bhakti to Krishna and Bhagavatam is the perfect scripture that explains all that. And so then once that's there and that understanding of a Chintaveda Veda Tattva, now you can start talking about, and then Uttara comes out and surrenders to Krishna and the story of Parikit. And then, you know, it goes on until Sukadeva, he gets cursed, and then Sukadeva Goswami comes. And then they're going to discuss, and now Bhagavatam starts. So it's second canto, then you're starting, you know, what was heard by Sutta Goswami. So the first canto is an introduction to the Bhagavatam given by Sutta Goswami to the sages at Naimisharana, you know, but documented by Vyasadeva. You know, so all these nice things have to be, you know, put in. So that's the importance. So the more we appreciate this, the more that aspect is being brought out from the beginning, then there'll be less confusion as time goes on. You know, it's just natural. The more we appreciate it and understand it from this point, then the quicker the devotees who are studying it will then appreciate it. Something,
Ms. Hare Krishna. Yeah, so this very point comes because of the discussion right now. And then the third Adhikarana, then it shows how all the other cantos also flow. And where is the, how bhakti is Abhideya, it's brought out from that, from each and every canto. Because now the discussion is on the first canto, and it goes up till discussing all up till full 12 cantos like that.
Wow. Okay, very
good. So he blinked out already. Jiva Goswami is already removing the peel and putting the fruit in the mouth.
Yes, the peel, the seed, the strings, everything. Yeah, no, that's so nice. So nice. Yeah. So we're good? Anything else? Jagadish Prabhu, is that answer? We're good? Okay. Then, okay, the Briti, the bottom of 40. The first Adhikarana, so that was what we just finished. And then establish the process of bhakti as the only independent process that can easily purify one from all material impurities and is joyfully performed. Right? No other process. Karma is just, it's a problem, right? You know, I mean, isn't it a saying? You know, you have it on a bumper sticker, you know, karma is a female canine, you know? Yeah, so it's just the way it works. And beyond, we see those guys are all wizzled up and dried up, and, you know? So it's a problem. Bhakti is the only one that's independent and is the only one that's joyful. The only joy in karma and jnana is the bhakti aspect. But otherwise, the processes themselves are very, very different. Next, it is emphasized that bhakti should be directed only towards the Supreme Lord and not towards the demigods, as the results offered by the demigods are temporary and of actually no benefit from the living entity. So whatever the demigods give, because they are officers in the material world, they can only give facilities from within the material world. They can't give anything else. Just like, let's say, you have an officer that's in charge of transportation, you know, in the state. So he can only give you facilities in connection with transportation, you know, put in a bus stop or widen the street or, you know, fix the potholes. He can't do something else. He can only work in that. So he can't work beyond. So the demigods can't work beyond. It's temporary. And we always have to remember is that the living entity, being the soul, there's actually no benefit for the living entity from any benediction the demigods may give. Right? It may be something you can use in Krishna's service, but it's that use in Krishna's service that is beneficial. So it's bhakti that's independent. And even if you didn't have that really nice facility, you had less facility, the bhakti can still be expressed. Yeah? Okay. So Adhikarana 2. So Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 2. Worship of the demigods is condemned. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having established the superiority of the process of worship of the Lord, Upasana, over the Karmakanda and Jnanakanda processes, next, the author describes that upasana directed towards demigods is condemned, right? So in upasana, it means your karma, kanda, and jnana kanda, those are what is it? You know, shakale, ashanta. Nobody's peaceful from that. So that leaves only upasana kanda, and upasana directed towards the Lord. So within upasana is also the worship of the demigods. So we can say, okay, worship the Lord and the demigods. But here, then, he's pointing out, no, worship of the demigods, that's condemned. So it's only worship of the Lord. Right? There are two forms of upasana. One, worship of the Supreme Lord. And two, worship of the demigods. In the current Adhikarana, the author states that worship of the demigods doesn't yield the same result as worship of the Supreme Lord because they don't possess the quality of pure sattva as Lord Vishnu. The author next points out that even those aspiring for liberation only worship Narayana, giving up worship of all other demigods. And what to speak of the devotees who aspire for the highest goal, love of God. Right? So we're worshiping Narayan, maybe it's limited, but when you want love of Godhead, then even more you're not interested. But in spite of having knowledge that we worship the Lord. Sorry?
Mataji had some question.
Yes. Okay, please.
Maharaja, what is the exact difference technically between activities in Karmakanda and between upasana to the demigods?
Means, see, is you're going to have a basic framework that all Vedic processes follow. Right? Means there's always going to be sadhana. You know, that sadhana is going to consist of surrender to guru, following instructions according to shastra, you know, regulation of the life, you know, in a particular way. And, you know, that charity, austerity, and penance, these are always going to be there. You know, getting up in the Brahma Muhurta, these kind of aspects. These are just basics that are the framework on which it all goes. Now, using that framework for getting material facilities, that's karma. Right? So therefore, then we follow the sadhana, we get up early, we worship our deities, we do everything like that because we want material facility here or in the future or both. We want to go to the heavenly planets, we want to enjoy here and like that. And so therefore, then all that sadhana, all that intelligence, that logic, and faith in scripture, faith in guru, you know, all those things remain, but they're directed through that medium, using the medium for getting the material benefits, right? Jnana will be the same activities, just now it will be connected through gaining liberation, right? And upasana, we see, is that's theirs. You can, without going through all the difficulties of the big, you know, karma and jnana, through upasana, worship the demigods, then you can also get these benefits. But the point is that it's still going to be, you know, temporary and limited, but it's going to be more pleasant because the emphasis is a bit more on bhakti. But worship of the Supreme Lord is going to get the highest, because then you're getting the eternal benefits that are attributed to the soul's relationship with Krishna. Right? So because everything has its uniqueness, right? It's all come from Krishna, it has uniqueness, so its existence means it has uniqueness. Then just as all the 14 books of Vedic knowledge are discussing Krishna, but from a particular perspective, therefore they have their own language, you know, it means their own vocabularies, their own certain details and stuff like that. So in the same way, the Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasakanda will have their particular details. But it's the same principles. It's just the detail matches the particular thing you want to do. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say you want to make a table. So then you have to get the ingredients that the table is made out of. You have to have a plan. You have to have, you know, direction. You have to have the instruments that you can transform those raw ingredients into the table. You know, in the same way as that you go into a kitchen, you still need that situation that's favorable for that transformation, the utensils that are there, the recipes, you know, that knowledge, that experience. It's the same thing. The principles remain the same. That's why in the Vedic principles, whatever it is, somewhere from karma, jnana, upasana, whatever is their background, then they can just naturally come into the bhakti process and it will work for them, because the basic fundamental principles are all the same. It's just now that the definitions on what's important and possibly some of the vocabulary will change. You know, it means they're dealing in synonyms. You know, what do you call it? Let's say we're cooking, we'll say ingredients. You know, but if we're making a table, we don't call them ingredients. We call them like supplies or something else. So, yeah, like that. So you go to a supply store to get supplies for building a table. You go to a market to buy things for cooking. You know, even though the supply store is a market, but it's called a supply store. You don't call it a market. I'm going to the market to buy stuff for that. They'll go, oh, so you're going to, you know, this supply place. Just because it has different definitions because of the nature of what's there. Right? But otherwise, the principle is the same. So that's why someone from the Vedic culture, no matter what their background, they won't have any difficulty following the sadhana of bhakti yoga. And if someone's come from any of the four sampradayas, then they won't have any problem following the sadhana of the Gaudiya line. But if someone is not from the Vedic background, that's where you'll see philosophically it will make sense, but religiously that's where the problem starts. Religiously that's where the problem starts, is because they don't, you know, so why do we have to go, you know, like people go to school. It's the popular thing nowadays in class that students just harass the teacher in the Western environment. Unless you go to a private school, you know, that you got to pay for, then they don't, because their point is you want to be here. We don't need you here. You can go home. Well, the state school is, no, you have to be there, and the teacher has to be there, and, you know, nobody cares. You know, individuals might, but as you know. So the whole thing is they don't have, you know, respective authority, respect to the teachers, respect to the parents. I have duties. You know, these are all like militate against your, you know, modern, you know, whatever it is, millennial or, you know, more even the Z generation. I think they're even more, that's the one going on now coming up. You know, it's just, they just, you know, interact on the phone on social media. And that is, for them is a full-time engagement and obligation. And anybody who gets in the way of that, you know, it's like, you know, they're toast. And I don't mean, you know, nice toast with some butter on it and jam and stuff like that. You know, so that's the difficulty is that they're the, where is these people who have more of a religious or conservative background, there is that sense of respect for parents, respect for others, respect for gratefulness of what people have done for you. And so the teachers are trying to teach you, therefore you should be grateful, you should learn, you need to know things, you have to be able to work, you, and by hard work you'll get things done. If you just expect things to be given to you, then you're never going to be, you know, amount to much, because, you know, what will you do with even you get it? And so you see that generally that more conservative is based on a religious faith, a religious belief. Not always, but if you go back far enough in time, it does. The person today says he doesn't, but his parents kind of do, and his grandparents quite did. And, you know, you go back, great-great-grandparents, you know, they may have died for their religion because they had faith in it. You know, so the whole point is it's coming from that side. So that's where the strength is. So those who have that more of a background in the concept of duties and regulation and, you know, good qualities that you have to respect your teachers and respect your authorities and perform your obligations, they will have an easier time with the sadhana and being stable in it and the culture of Krishna consciousness than those who don't have. And so this modern thing where it's just all about the kind of aspect where everyone just does whatever they feel like, that's what has that got to do with God consciousness? You're conscious of God. In the modern thing, I'm conscious of myself. Who am I? Being true to myself. But they don't even know who the self is. They say they're being true to them, but with time, their body changes, you know? So yeah, I'm young, I'm free and all that. Come back in 10 years. Are you young and free? Come back in 20 years, you know, like that. And so all this stuff is, it's just based on ignorance, ignorance within ignorance. It's like putting an extra dose of ignorance, you know, it's like, you know, like, how you say, you know, it's like, they say you have these, a preparation that's triple chocolate. You know, you have chocolate ice cream with chocolate sauce and you put chocolate chunks on top of that. You know, or with chocolate cake, they call it death by chocolate, you know. I mean, they go down with a smile, but so this is death by ignorance. You have the original, I'm God, I'm the controller and enjoyer from the Karana Sharira, right? And then you make it about the subtle body that, you know, the ignorance says, no, I'm free, I do whatever I want, you know, because I am who I want. And then the third is that it's all based around the body and senses, what the body is, like that. And so this triple, you know, how you say, triumvirate of Maya's ignorance is just, will just destroy everything. So one has to appreciate that, know that common ground, that's why the Vedic culture, Prabhupada and the Acharyas talk about it. So those people who rejected and all that, that's why that position is called the Mlecha. Mlecha means who militates against the Vedic culture. You may not understand it. You may have some doubts about it. That's okay. You know, that's why then we have knowledge. We have that. But Mlecha means we militate against it. We don't need it. We're devotees. It's kind of, but the point is it's the culture that they follow in the spiritual world. It only becomes formalized here because, you know, after passing through Vaikuntha, where it's the opulence. Because you see when they talk about heaven and that, they don't talk about just it's a nice little garden. It means in the first chapter, you know, it says about a garden, but after that they just talk about, you know, the opulence and the palaces and all the facilities that all have and all that, you know, while it actually just says it's a nice garden, they hang out with God, talk with God, walk with God, you know. So it's already alluding to this point of the relationship with God is the important thing. And then after that, they never talk about it again. Just, you know, God's there, he sees, he takes care, he'll protect you. Nice. But they're only talking as Paramatma. Though the opening chapter, after the primary creation, talks about, you know, the God and his relationship with everybody. So again, you know, the descending process, you talk about how it all comes down from God. You know, but they start with the creation aspect and then get to the personal aspect. So that they, that whatever it is, it's complete. But then after that, then people lose the plot. So even there, at least there, there's some idea that it's regulation. So it's different than the regulation they're used to. But if you keep talking about the principle of regulation, it will be appreciated and can be taken advantage of. But otherwise, then the difficulty comes up as those that take too much of a non-religious or non-theistic approach and simply take the, you know, that social, political, economic, judicial kind of level. Where's the poise for, where's the regulation? Who establishes? They establish it according to them, but anything else that was there before that anyone functions on is wrong. And then, you know, you come back to them and after 6 months, it's different again. It's the karmis, you know, the wind of socio-political change happens amongst the karmis. Then you see that wind blowing through the society of these devotees. And then they get completely distracted from the religion of Krishna Khan, how the form that you use. So that's why amongst Hindus, you talk about, we follow Bhagavatam. You know, they're thinking, oh, but we follow Vedanta Sutra, we follow Gita, we follow Veda. But it's still the same thing. It's they're simply arguing over which Shastra. Right? But they're not arguing that you follow Shastra. And they're not arguing that you have guru. It's just, if you want a karma, you follow this guru. You want to go back to Godhead, you follow that. We even had devotees where they went to this big, big famous yogi and this and that. And so, you know, and said, you know, they're interested in that devotion to the Lord. And they just look at him and say, that I can't give you. You have to go to Aitha Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. You have to go to ISKCON. There you'll get that. I teach simply some external, you know, yoga asanas and some meditation and this and that. But you want something real, go to him. Go to Prabhupada. But the point is they know the sadhana is saying, that's the thing, is that we do things that everybody does and they all like that. They respect that. Does that make sense? So the form of it is the same. It's just the detail is there only in, because of what their goal is, then you're using different definitions of the details. It has different unique forms that it manifests in. And may have different names, so it appears like completely different processes, but it's actually the same process, just misdirected. You know, I mean, misdirected means it only goes up to a certain level. The only karma only takes you to heavenly plan. Liberation takes you to Brahman, right? Brahman will take you up to Vaikuntha. Bhagavan will take you to Goloka. But Bhagavan, as Swayam Krishna, that will take you to Braj. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, so it's 8:30, we should end now. Because otherwise, then people have places to go, people to see, things to do, you know, the whole thing. Okay, thank you. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shanti.